knew I was ready too. Hell, I was pretty sure Edie knew. I'd been more like her colleague than her subordinate since my last promotion. We functioned like a two-person dream team. There had been rumors of her retirement for a year now, and I felt it in my bones that she would recommend me to take her place when she left.
Good morning,
Maya said as she walked into the department from the stairwell.
How is pizza night with the roommates?
Maya and I started with the company on the exact same day and had been work besties ever since. I gave my head a shake and opened Outlook. Absolutely the same as the last, although no one ran into their room and slammed the door this time. Those two are a trip, she said, taking off her jacket and dropping into her chair. Who would have thought they'd be so entertaining? I couldn't remember what I'd thought before they moved in, and it had only been a couple months. Living with them was like a fever dream, just a hazy reel of weird, did that really happen, moments. And if it weren't for the fact that they thoroughly enjoyed cleaning and paid rent absurdly early, I'd definitely be questioning my decision.
Definitely not me, I replied.
There are donuts in accounting, by the way, she said as she logged into her computer, but no chocolate.
If there's no chocolate, there's no donut.
Preach.
A few hours later, while I was eating my Southwestern salad and listening to a mind-numbingly boring Zoom presentation about a new wellness app, my phone buzzed.
Max. I've got the details for tomorrow. Also, your payment will be 4K.
I stopped chewing. 4 grand? I texted.
You make 4K interrupting weddings?
Max.
The rate varies and isn't set by me.
That didn't make sense. Maybe Max was a sketchball. I texted,
is there some sort of governing board that sets the rates for objectors? Is there an objectors union that negotiates the wage?
Max.
Listen, wise ass, I've never had to set a rate. Every time I've done it, people have just offered me payment, as in, I'll give you 2K to do this for me.
That kind of made sense. I set down my fork and texted,
and TJ offered you 4K to break up his redneck nuptials?
Max.
Correct. Is that a workable wage?
I made a good living at Nespo, but I really wanted to ditch the roommates. They were sweet, but a lot. So any bonus funds I could bank toward living alone in Stewart's former residence would be very welcome.
Me.
Yes.
Details, please?
Max.
So the wedding is at 4 p.m. and very casual, jeans and boots. I'll pick you up at 3:15 and we can talk through it on the way there so you're ready.
I picked up my Diet Pepsi and couldn't believe I was actually going to go through with it. It was an absurd thing to do, but every time I thought about backing out, I remembered that moment last winter when I'd decided my only option was to marry Stuart and get divorced. I'd felt trapped and helpless and utterly alone. Thank God Asha found Max. I usually kept my thoughts about love to myself, because it seemed like I was the only one who got what a ridiculous farce it was. The rest of the world bought into the absurd notion that there was someone out there just made for them, and I knew my opinions were pointless in swaying their wide-eyed optimism. But if I could help TJ escape, I wanted to. Besides, his fiancée sounded like a trash human who deserved to be publicly dragged.
Me.
Can you forward me a brief outline of your speeches that I can review? Just as I took a big gulp of soda, my phone started ringing. I looked at the display and gasped, sending my pop down the wrong tube. It was Max. I was violently coughing when I answered the unexpected, and what the hell, why is he calling me? Call.
This is Sophie! I managed.
You okay?
He asked.
Yes, fine,
I said between hacks.
Give me one sec.
I set down the phone just in time to see Edie watching me through her office window as I coughed so hard tears leaked from my eyes. Damn it. I finally got myself together enough to get back on the call. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I don't have any speeches, white papers, or PowerPoint presentations to forward,
he said, his deep voice rich with sarcasm.
I'm kind of an off-the-cuff guy.
Wonderful, I replied, Googling wedding objections to see if I could find anything similar. So I'm going to show up totally unprepared.
I'll prepare you in the car.
he said, his tone changing to something a little more reassuring. I promise it will be easy. You drop your bombs and walk away.
I leaned back a little in my chair and tried imagining it, standing up and doing it.
And I'll be right beside you to help if things go sideways.
I didn't like him mentioning sideways possibilities, but I knew I couldn't do it if he wasn't going with me.
Do you have cowboy boots?
He asked, and just as I was about to answer, Stuart walked up to my desk. He had that scared-to-make-eye-contact look about him that he always got when he had to talk to me. I rolled my eyes and whispered,
What, Stuart?
You've got the big conference room at 2 o'clock today, but Edie said there's only going to be 5 of you in there, he said quickly, breathlessly. Would you mind moving to the smaller room on the 3rd floor so sales can have their QBR?
I narrowed my eyes and stared at him unblinkingly until I saw him swallow. I could definitely move my meeting, and I would, but I was going to make him squirm first.
I'm really not sure. I'll have to get back to you.
Another swallow.
Do you know when?
I'm on a call, Stuart, I growled, raising the phone to my ear and turning my chair around so my back was to him. I'll let you know. I felt victorious when I heard him sigh and walk out of the HR area.
That's not the same Stuart, is it? Max asked, which brought my attention back to the call I'd been on.
What? Oh, yeah, it is, but it's not what you think. We work together.
No shit, he asked, sounding utterly shocked at my words. You work together after everything that happened?
We do, I said, not appreciating the judgment in his voice.
Are you, like, a doctor? An astronaut? What do you do for a living?
I wasn't sure how I felt about the question, or why he would assume astronaut, but I answered with,
I work in HR. Why?
HR? He sounded confused.
So you could get a job anywhere.
I knew where he was heading, so I said, Please make your judgmental point instead of asking an endless stream of leading questions.
Okay, why would you stay at a job where you have to see that fucker every day?
I was ready with a glib answer, but his use of fucker made my mouth close. There was something kind of nice about it, though I didn't feel like exploring that surefire sign of my pathetic insecurities. It's a long story.
Please make your answer concise and direct instead of a long story.
That made me want to smile, the asshole. I lowered my voice and said into the phone,
I'm next in line for a big promotion, so I have no intention of leaving the company just because that little wanker cheated on me. He can leave, and if he doesn't, he can deal with my presence here.
I heard a low, deep chuckle that did something to my stomach.
Dear God, you make his life hell on a daily basis, don't you?
I shrugged and kind of liked telling someone. I do my best, yes.
Mad respect, he said. And I also pity your ex just a little because I have a feeling you're very good at your job.
Thank you. You shouldn't, and I am.
So about the boots, do you have a pair?
Yes, although I have to say it feels a bit ghoulish destroying lives while wearing a pair of Justin's.
You're not destroying lives, you're saving them.
That's right. I am.
That's right, Steinbeck. You are, he reiterated, sounding sincere. Now drop me your address and I'll see you tomorrow at 3:15.
Chapter 8 Max. I don't know what I expected when I knocked on the door, but it wasn't this. Who are you? A tiny, white-haired woman in a flowered dress, holding 2 cats, stood inside the door that had only been opened a crack. Big eyes stared up at me suspiciously from behind a pair of round-framed glasses, and she said, Sophie doesn't date, so I find it hard to believe that she invited you over. We aren't dating, I said. We're friends. Well, you're wearing a lot of cologne for a friend, she said, and the woman actually did air quotes with her bony fingers. Is your granddaughter here? I asked, trying to see past the lady. For fuck's sake, Soph isn't my granddaughter, she said, rolling her eyes and scratching the black cat's head. Just because I have white hair doesn't mean every goddamn person under the age of 50 is my grandchild.
Who's there?
A second voice yelled, but it wasn't Sophie either. It sounded like another senior. What the hell?
What's your name? The woman asked, then added, Is it Julian? You look like a Julian.
No, I said, unsure if Julian was a compliment or an insult. I'm Max. She rolled her eyes again and shouted,
Someone named Max.
I heard footsteps, and then the door was yanked open. Yep, another senior, only this one was male and wearing skinny jeans with a Green Day t-shirt.
Hi, I'm Larry.
He crossed his arms, nodded his head at the other one, and said,
This is Rose. What's your business with Soph?
We're friends, and she's going with me to a wedding, I said, feeling somehow persecuted as the two elders glared at me. Is she here?
That depends,
Rose said, still peering at me as if I resembled a serial killer. And that was it. She just glared and waited. So I said,
On.
To which she replied,
On?
What the hell is she doing? I was raised to respect my elders, but these two were really something. Larry unhelpfully added,
On?
Oh, dear Lord. The sound of a door opening preceded the sight of Sophie, putting in an earring and walking toward us as she fumbled with the back. She was looking down as she said, You guys, I'm going out tonight, but I... Her words stopped when she looked up and saw me. Us. Hey, she said to me. Eyes narrowed in confusion, and then she said to the seniors, What are you guys doing? She bent her knees and kissed each of the cats on the head.
Just screening your callers,
Rose said, still glaring at me with her duo of cats.
This Julian says he's your friend.
Does he know? Sophie asked, her red lipsticked mouth sliding into a smart-ass half grin, and she was unbelievably gorgeous. She'd been a beautiful bride and a hot businesswoman, but the plaid shirt, jeans, and boots?
Yeah, that shit worked for her.
It somehow complimented her don't fuck with me vibe in a really nice way.
Quit looking at her like that,
Larry muttered, scowling at me. Like what? Sophie said, her brown eyes twinkling mischievously as she scratched the gray cat before sliding into a jean jacket. How exactly is my friend Max looking at me?
Like he's Rhett Butler watching Scarlett O'Hara from the bottom of the staircase.
No, I said, feeling like a naughty child all of a sudden. I wasn't.
Ooh, Rhett.
Rose swooned, fanning herself and smiling.
Fucking hottie.
Well, that may be so, but I wasn't.
Right,
Larry said to Rose, his grumpy face transforming into sunshine as he ignored me and reminisced about Clark Gable.
When he's hiding in the study while she confesses her love to Ashley, I die every time.
We have to go, Sophie said. God bless her. The wedding starts at 4.
But you hate weddings,
Rose said, giving Sophie a weird look.
I thought you'd made a resolution to decline every single invitation.
Not every invitation. Sophie glanced at me with a sheepish grin, then said to the two as she grabbed her bag, I shouldn't be out late, but you're on your own for dinner.
Have fun,
Rose said breezily, as if she hadn't been openly hostile to me.
Drive safe,
Larry said, then added, just as the door was closing,
Rhett Butler.
Sophie didn't say a word, didn't even look at me as we walked to the elevator. I waited, and just as we stepped in and she pressed the lobby button, she said, I suppose you're wondering what the deal is with those two. Fraternity siblings, I guessed. Ha ha, she said, looking at the floor numbers above the door instead of at me. Court-appointed guardians? Hilarious. Is this a catfishing situation? where you thought you were online connecting with your dream man and instead landed two elderly besties? There are no dream men, she said, and they are my roommates. Wait. I turned toward her, so she had to look at me. Is this like a Freaky Friday magical realism thing where your roommates were turned into the elderly? Are there 27-year-olds inside those mid-century bodies? She finally looked up at me, giving in to a full grin that had the power to knock a guy on his ass. Do you want to know the whole story or not? Tell me, I said, as the doors opened and we exited into the lobby. So, my grandmother, who is a manipulative delight, called me one afternoon, all upset because her widowed best friend was going to have to move to a nursing home because her kids wouldn't let her live alone. She tells me all about this sweet lady who should not be forced to live in an institution, right? I mean, I've got tears in my eyes as she talks about this woman who is smart, fully mobile, and sharp, but is being sent away simply because she's single. Oh, God, she knows you well, I said, which was odd because I didn't really know her, yet I knew I was right. I held the door as we walked outside, and I pointed in the direction of where my truck was parked. Sophie put her hands in her pockets and said, she moves on and is like, how are you doing with the expensive apartment and only one income? Because she knows that I kept Stuart's apartment out of spite, even though I totally can't afford it. My apartment costs more than I make, but I'd rather die than let Stu win. I know it's dumb, but I don't care. I didn't say anything, which made her glance over at me. When I still didn't say anything, she gave a nod, like she appreciated the lack of a lecture, and said, so, Nana Puppet Master waited a day, then called me with the brilliant idea that her life insurance-rich buddy who loves cooking and cleaning could move in with me as a roommate, pay half of my rent, and quietly stay in their room without making any noise. I had to laugh at that. Which one is the quiet one? She gave me a look. Obviously neither, but this was Rose. So how did Larry come into the picture? I asked, genuinely curious now. I hit the unlock button on my truck, and we got in. Larry drives Rose to Bunko, and when he dropped her off and saw the place, he wanted to live there too. Of course he did. I had a strong suspicion that Sophie tried to be a hard ass, but was actually pretty soft in the middle. Now, she said, turning toward me in her seat as she buckled up, tell me everything I need to know about objecting. Well, for starters, I said, starting the truck and putting it into gear, take a deep breath and chill. It's just a low-key thing where you say a couple sentences. That's it. Yeah, chill isn't really my thing, she said. But I'll try. Do you think I should put the stress on the word cheating or the phrase the entire time? I groaned. It doesn't matter. Yes, it does. I'd been driving for 20 minutes, and Sophie had been practicing over and over again since the minute we'd pulled away from her apartment. I could tell she was nervous, but memorizing it like a speech seemed like a bad idea to me. It's specifying whether the main issue is the fact that she cheated or that she never stopped cheating. If it were me, I said, I'd just calmly blurt it out and move on, because TJ knows it's coming. Show me, was her reply. Say it as if you were doing it. I sighed. Fine, lead me in. She cleared her throat. If anyone here knows of any reason these two should not be married, I do, I interrupted. I know for a fact that Callie has been cheating with Ronnie from day one and has never stopped, and I think TJ here deserves to know that. That's bullshit, Sophie said with a terrible southern drawl. She's lying. Then give TJ your phone. Open your Ring doorbell app and let TJ watch the footage of Ronnie coming and going when he's teaching school. The whole town knows it's been going on. Who the hell are you? She said, her feigned accent almost sounding Scottish. Why are you doing this? Because I care about TJ and don't want to see him end up trapped in a bad marriage. You make it seem so easy, Sophie said, looking like she was impressed. When you do it, I feel like everything's going to be okay. That's because it will, I reassured her, trying not to think about the way TJ had described his fiancée, angry, feisty, firecracker, volatile. I'll make sure of it. Good, she said, still sounding nervous. Thank you. Are you a good drinker? Pardon? Can you function with a buzz? Hell yes, I can, she said, sounding downright cocky. Why? Because you're going to reach into the back seat, grab the bottle of Jack out of the target bag, and do a shot, maybe two. I glanced over, and she didn't look like she had a problem with that. It takes the edge off so you're not so tense. Is that what you did for my wedding? She asked as she reached into the back seat and pulled out the plastic grocery bag. I could see her in my peripheral vision, and I was mildly surprised by how casually she took out the bottle, uncapped it, and lifted it to her lips. A couple pregame shots? Nah, I said, thinking back to that cold winter day. As soon as I heard your fiancé's name was Stuart, I knew I was good. I glanced over as she tipped back the bottle and took a swig. All I saw were her red, red lips.
Chapter 9. Sophie. I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. I walked into the chapel with Max at my side, and my heart felt like it was going to pound out of my chest as I looked at all the attendees already seated. A woman with a fiddle was playing Safe and Sound, and as we sat down on a pew toward the back, I couldn't believe someone would choose to have a song from The Hunger Games played at their wedding. I wasn't a big believer in curses or fate, but it still seemed like bad mojo. Holy shit, I was the bad mojo incarnate, wasn't I? Deep breath, Max whispered, and his deep voice made a shiver crawl up my spine. This is no big deal. You're just saving a life, Steinbeck. I turned my head, God, he had great eyes, and quietly said, thank you. I could see TJ, who looked like a really nice guy, sweating at the front of the church as he stood there with his cowboy-hatted groomsmen behind him. They looked like something from a Garth Brooks video, and if I weren't so close to anxiety-induced puking, I'd want to laugh at their outfits. Jeans, black chambray shirts, and black hats juxtaposed behind TJ, who was wearing black jeans, a white chambray shirt, and the requisite white cowboy hat. Real heavy-handed with the good guy versus bad guy theme. But who was I to judge when I'd thought fur muffs, because Christmas were a cool accessory for bridesmaids at my own botched wedding? The fiddler ditched the melancholy song and switched to what sounded like It's Your Love by Faith Hill and Tim McGraw as the church doors opened and the bridesmaids started down the aisle. I seriously wondered if I were going to vomit. Satin camouflage sundresses, cowboy boots, and bejeweled denim jackets were something I'd never seen at a wedding before, but the daisy bouquets the bridesmaids carried were lovely. I felt tiny beads of sweat form on my nose, and I wondered if it was hot in there or if it was me. Of fucking course it was me. My breathing was shallow as the last bridesmaid passed by, leaving the bride visible as she waited. She was wearing a short white dress with cowboy boots and a white cowboy hat that had a veil attachment. Wow, they were definitely all about theme here. The fiddler switched to Dear God, No One Else on Earth by Wynonna Judd, and the bride began walking, well, kind of strutting, down the aisle. She was pretty, but I was also scared of the stubborn jut of her chin and the way the crowd started making whistle sounds. These were her people, so what was going to happen when someone, me, ruined her wedding? Shit, shit, shit. I was seriously contemplating doing nothing, just sitting there and watching two strangers get married, when I saw it. She glanced to her left when she reached the third pew from the front, and the cowboy on the end gave her a wink and a very sexual smirk. Holy shit, that had to be Ronnie. And her smile literally grew bigger, as if they were sharing a fantastical secret joke. Those bastards. They were doubling down on their grossness in a church while she was getting married to someone else? Forget it. The bitch had it coming. Good, I thought. That's good. The anger was way better than the nerves, so I thought back to my own relationship in hopes of building more rage. I'd actually thought we were a good match,
Stuart and I. I truly believed that we were best friends and great roommates and could have a wonderful life together, being perfect partners. Maybe not true love, but more than what I'd needed for a happily ever after. The first time he cheated, he'd blamed booze. And I'd forgiven him. Everyone had the capacity to cheat, and booze amplified that. Not that it made it okay. It was disappointing and horrible, but I got past it, because I knew we'd be a great match. After the cheating, I knew I didn't love him. That's when I really started thinking about the big lie. But I liked him a lot and had a whole backpack of warm feelings for Stuart that were worth the risk. But the second time had punched me in the face. His phone buzzed while he was showering, and if I hadn't been sitting in the dark, I doubt I would have seen the text that said, "You better wear my boxers to the wedding, babe." That was weird, so I'd crawled over to his side of the bed and opened his messages. I legitimately thought there would be a simple explanation. It hadn't even entered my consciousness that I might find text messages between Stuart and a woman who used the word love, had naked photo exchanges, and also mocked me for a myriad of things that were wrong with me. Bossy Bitch had apparently been their nickname for me. The music stopped and the pastor started speaking. Everything he said sounded just as flat and ridiculous as the words my pastor had uttered at my wedding. "Join together, these two in love, blah, blah, blah." My breath caught in my throat as I waited for the passage. "If any..." "I do," I yelled. "Too early," Max muttered from my right. "Miss?" the pastor said, his eyebrows crinkled together. "I'm sorry."
"You said if anyone here knows any reason, well, I do," I said, heat flooding my cheeks. "These two should absolutely not get married."
A loud murmur rolled through the crowd, and I trained my eyes on the preacher's face. I didn't dare look at the bride or her black-hatted backups.
"Callie has been having an affair with Ronnie for years, and everyone but TJ knows it. He deserves better."
I heard multiple gasps, and the bride said,
"What the hell? She's a liar."
"Nope," I said, my stomach knotting as the woman seated in front of me whipped around and pinned me with a lethal glare.
"Are you done, liar?"
the bride yelled at me, her eyes scary mean.
"I don't even know who the hell—"
"Is it true?" TJ interrupted. "Thank you, TJ."
"No, it's not true,"
Callie said, looking downright pissed as she waved a hand in my direction.
"I've never seen that knockoff Barbie chick in my life."
"Still true, though," I said, getting pissed in my own right. "Knockoff Barbie, what the hell?
You don't know me, but that doesn't mean you didn't cheat." "Listen, Skipper."
"Callie," TJ interrupted, sounding a little angry, too. "Did you or did you not continue with Ronnie? Answer me." For the first time, she looked caught. Callie opened her mouth, but just made a few stammering noises and said no multiple times. Max nudged my side, and I turned, ready to make our breakaway.
"I did not, TJ," the bride said. "I would never." "Then show him your phone, or the Ring doorbell footage of when Ronnie came over every day."
I channeled the calm facade Max had brought to my wedding.
"If you're innocent, hand it over." "How dare you?"
"Give me your phone, Cal," TJ said in a booming voice, and that was our cue to leave. I stepped out of our row with Max beside me, and we headed for the back of the church as Callie and TJ argued. My job was done, and it had gone perfectly. "Holy shit, I did it," I whispered, looking over at Max, feeling like a damn superhero. "I saved TJ. Saved the world from another bout of heartbroken lovesickness. I was like the Marie Curie of lovelornitis or something."
"You did it,"
he replied with a smile. But then he looked behind me and his face changed.
"Soph?"
I started to turn around, but there wasn't time before a body hit mine from behind, a palm over my face as someone yelled,
"You bitch!"
I was pretty sure it was the bride, on my back like I was her fucking pony. Shocked, I stumbled a little before pure rage shot through me. Oh, hell no. I was good at conflict avoidance. It was a big part of my job, in fact. But I'd be damned if I'd let some Miranda Lambert wannabe take me down in front of hundreds of people like she had the upper hand. Oh, hell no.
Chapter 10 Max. Shit, shit, shit. I promised Sophie that everything would be okay. I stepped forward to break it up, but Sophie straightened to her full height, threw back her elbows, and knocked the bride off her back. Callie stumbled backward in her boots as Sophie turned around and held out a hand. "Just stop," she said calmly, sounding like this was just a normal occurrence and not at all something out of a reality TV episode. "This is between you and TJ, not me." "The hell it is," the bride yelled, lunging for Sophie. I stepped in front of her, causing Callie to stumble into me instead of Soph. But then Sophie pushed me out of the way. Sophie pushed me out of the way, and as Callie came at her again, Sophie grabbed an arm and managed to turn the bride around and get her into a headlock. A fucking perfect headlock. "Settle down," Sophie said through gritted teeth, looking like an undercover cop on a TV show, "and leave me alone."
"Fucking bitch,"
Callie squealed as her face turned very red and she squirmed to get free. "You are in a church, for God's sake," Sophie said, sounding remarkably relaxed. "Watch your language." The bridal party was frozen and looked unsure if they should assist the bride or back the hell down. The pastor appeared to be crossing himself. "Listen, we're going to take off," I said, hoping a little calm sarcasm might diffuse the situation, "and let Callie and TJ work this out. Can someone please assist in the bridal handoff here?" Everyone looked shell-shocked and unable to move, rightly so. But then the bride's father stood. I watched him walk toward us in his cowboy hat and boots with fucking spurs, oh shit, and wondered if he was going to help me or murder me. His tough, weathered face made it hard to tell. My worldview narrowed to the ominous jingle of those ridiculous spurs.
"Cut the shit, Cal,"
he said in a low, Clint Eastwood kind of voice as he approached his daughter.
"No fighting in church."
"Thank God." The man gave Sophie a nod, and she released the bride, who was now a bit purple-faced. She didn't try to physically attack Sophie again, but that was probably because TJ came over immediately, still demanding answers. As we exited the chapel, though, she did manage to yell,
"That's right, get the hell out of here."
We damn near sprinted to my truck when we got outside, neither of us talking as we focused on getting the hell out of there. But once we were buckled and the engine was running, I looked over at her. The back of her hair was sticking up, and without thinking, I reached over and patted it down, which made her laugh. Eyes crinkled at the corners, which made me laugh, too. A second later, we were both cackling at the absurdity of what had just happened, the kind of full-on belly laughing that put tears in both of our eyes. When she finally got herself together, Sophie said, "Let's never do a redneck wedding again." I wiped at my eyes and put the truck in drive.
"Agreed."
We were meeting TJ at a bar a few towns over for payment, though God only knew how long it would take him to extricate himself from the mess at the church. TJ and Callie shared bank accounts, so he hadn't been able to Venmo beforehand because she would have asked questions. I had zero interest in taking money from my old friend, but since he insisted, Sophie was getting the whole pot.
"I have to say," Sophie said, "I actually feel like I did something good today."
"You're just being cocky because of the headlock, which was very impressive, I might add." I glanced over at her and was surprised to see her turned toward me in her seat, looking relaxed and chill.
"Absolutely I am," she agreed, sounding pleased with herself. "I've never done that outside of the gym, so it felt amazing to pull it off."
"You grapple?" I asked, shocked, but also not, because she was clearly a mass of contradictions.
"No, but I take a self-defense course every year to keep myself sharp. Never imagined I'd use my skills on a redneck bride."
"I bet," I said, switching to the other lane.
So, does this mean you're open to doing another wedding? I don't know, she replied, tilting her head in consideration. On one hand, I feel like I helped someone, but on the other, I feel like I was very nearly murdered by a redneck congregation. That's called Saturday night, sunshine. It probably is in whatever that hick town was called. Probably, I agreed. But most weddings are very normal, with zero camo and few hillbillies. Then I would probably consider another normal wedding. I glanced over. Is there a money threshold? As in, you won't do it for less than a certain amount? Not really, because the money part of this feels a little skeevy, to be honest. She leaned down and opened her purse. I like helping people, and I can definitely use the cash because I'd like to ditch the roommate someday, but it feels wrong somehow. Agreed. That reminds me. She glanced over as she pulled out a tube of lipstick. I texted Asha after Starbucks yesterday, and she said her check didn't bounce because you still haven't cashed it. That's weird, I said, my eyes staying on the road. So you lied to me, she said, not sounding upset about it. I tried lying to you, I corrected, switching lanes to go around a slow truck. But you lawyered the shit out of my attempt and made me lean on your heartstrings instead. Jerk. She said with a tease in her voice. Bleeding heart, I replied. She coughed a laugh. Takes one to know one. Agree yet again, I said. It was weird that we barely knew each other, because the look we shared, a self-deprecating kind of appreciative stare, felt like something that belonged to old friends. You do cash some of the checks, don't you? She asked, pulling down the visor. Or are you actually a superhero? Hasn't anyone ever told you that it's rude to ask about finances? Hasn't anyone ever told you that it's rude to call someone rude? My eyes went back to her side of the truck, and she was running that red lipstick over her lips. Dear God, she has a sexy mouth. I cleared my throat and looked back at the highway. You know, I said, we should always do weddings as a team. No one thought you were into the groom because you were with a date, which really cut out some potential bullshit. I do remember Stuart giving me a suspicious glare when you first objected, so I could see how that could be a presumption. Again, with the takes one to know one, right? For sure. She leaned down and put her lipstick back in her bag. But what makes you think I have all this free time to accompany you to weddings? I do have a life, you know. No offense, I said. But I'm picturing your roommates right now and not believing you. Shut up and drive, Parks. Shut up and ride, Steinbeck.
Chapter 11 Sophie. That guy. Your turn. Okay. I narrowed my eyes and looked at the man who'd just entered the bar. Max and I had been playing What Would That Person Do in an Apocalypse for nearly an hour, side by side on our stools at the bar, and I was having a blast. His name is Chuck, and he's going to die the first week. Why? Max asked, also watching the new customer as he lifted a bottle of Dos Equis to his lips. Because he works in construction. No offense, I quickly added, not wanting to insult him. When I'd done my Max creeping, I'd noticed he had degrees in architecture and engineering, which somehow made him wildly interesting to me. Probably because I sucked at math and he obviously did not. No offense, Max said with a teasing gleam in his dark eyes, because I work in construction. Have you been stalking me, Miss Steinbeck? I wouldn't say stalking, I replied, having a hard time not grinning. More like investigating. Should I be alarmed? He asked, looking anything but. He looked, actually, like he was amused that I'd checked him out. He also looked really freaking hot. He was wearing nothing special, black button-down shirt, faded jeans, square-toed boots, but he wore nothing special well. His shirt was rolled up, giving a little forearm, and I was distracted by the breadth of his chest. I was definitely not admiring the curve of his ass in those jeans. Perhaps I needed to slow down on the wine. I said, I just wanted to make sure you weren't a serial killer before I hopped in the car with you.
Do LinkedIn profiles include murdering statuses?
Ish.
Seriously with that?
Do you want to hear about Chuck or not?
I set down my wine glass and crossed my arms, my gaze returning to the man.
Lay it on me, Soph.
Soph. We barely knew each other, but I was already Soph to him. It didn't make sense, but it felt right for him to call me that. Probably because of his involvement in my wedding. That gave us history somehow. A weird foundation to connect to this new friendship. Friendship? Were we friends? He's one of those guys who knows enough to be dangerous. A do-it-himselfer, even when he shouldn't be.
I know a lot of those, Max muttered, also watching Chuck.
So, in the face of danger, he's going to go all in on his machismo-fueled need to prove he's a man, right? He's going to gas up his generator, chop his own wood, get out his crossbow, and find a deer to kill, even though his pantry is still full of food. As if hearing me, Chuck's head swiveled in my direction, and he looked right at me.
Gah,
I managed, whipping my stool around so I was facing the bar again.
I think Chuckles sensed your degradation,
Max said, smirking as he slowly turned his stool around as well. I think he did, I agreed.
Holy shit, you guys!
TJ appeared from nowhere, now in a hoodie and jeans, and took the stool beside Max, wearing a huge smile.
That was amazing! I can't believe it worked!
God, that took me back to my wedding day, the way I'd felt right afterward. It was like a lifetime of stress and worry had dissolved instantly, and I'd felt like I could run 100 miles.
Can I hug you, Sophie?
He asked me, and that took me a little off guard. I wasn't a hugger and definitely hadn't expected this stranger to request it. But I wasn't a jerk either.
Of course, I said,
and the words were barely out of my mouth before he was on his feet and wrapping his arms around me. It was a big, tight, all-encompassing hug that for some reason made me feel a little emotional.
Thank you so much, TJ said,
and when he pulled back, I could see the tears in his eyes. Tears. Sadness, exhaustion, but also, I could see relief, because he was free, exactly how I'd felt.
You're welcome,
I said, and I felt like I'd done something good, something important, which felt amazing because I'd been a bit lost since the wedding. I glanced over at Max, who was staring at me like he was trying to figure me out, and I wasn't sure I wanted him to, so I flipped him off.
So, how did it go? I asked TJ, smiling as I heard Max's deep chuckle. Did the drama die after we left?
Fuck no, he said, then proceeded to launch into the bonker story of how Callie denied everything until Ronnie stood up and confessed. Ronnie confessed, apologized to TJ, then professed his undying love to Callie in front of literally God and everyone.
So just when I thought the entire ordeal couldn't get any more Jerry Springer, Callie called Ronnie pathetic and told him she didn't love him and never had. She said, and I quote, "I only love your penis."
No, Max said, shaking his head. Nope, dude, I am so sorry.
TJ shrugged. I'm just glad I finally saw her for who she was before it was too late.
I raised my wine glass. Hear, hear. We hung out with TJ for another hour, drinking, TJ and I, not Max, and watching baseball on the TVs behind the bar. TJ was incredibly sweet, the kind of guy you wanted to protect at all costs, and I had mad respect for Max's insistence that I help him out. He was a very nice guy for being determined to save his old friend. The more wine I drank, the more interested I became in their childhood stories. Max was suddenly the most fascinating man on the planet. But not because of my buzz. It was because I was learning about my partner in crime, this stranger I was joining forces with to do something important. I told him that on the way home. I turned a little in my seat and said, "Do you realize how interesting you've become now that we're partners?" His lips turned up into a smile, but his eyes stayed on the road.
I did not realize that.
I mean, you're objectively a handsome guy and fairly charming, but who's not, right?
Right, he replied, looking amused as his wrist casually hung over the steering wheel.
I mean, I explained, that isn't necessarily interesting, at least not to me. I knew I was tipsy rambling, but I didn't particularly care. I kept going. But now that we're officially an objecting team and I've seen you at work, I want to know where you live, what your office looks like, if you go to a barber or a salon, if you have any pets, what your favorite food is, and what song is stuck in your head lately. You've become a whole thing I'm curious about. Well, he said, glancing over at me for a second before his eyes returned to the road, I live a couple blocks away from you. My office is modern minimalist. Barber, a cat, spaghetti, and exile. God, cat, spaghetti, and exile were the same person, I replied, surprised. Are we? He asked, giving me a small smile as he hit his blinker and slowed at an intersection. Are we what? I replied, forgetting what I'd last said, because he was looking at me, and damn, the man was attractive. There was something about the way his lips turned up that did things to my stomach. I bet he's good in bed. Not that I was thinking about sleeping with him, God no, but objectively speaking, he seemed very capable. He struck me as the kind of guy who was remembered as the best I ever had by everyone he'd been with. He had that I know carnal secrets look about him. The same person. He came to a stop at the red light and looked over at me again, his mouth in a sexy grin. Are you laughing at me? I asked, not caring if he was. I'm enjoying you, he replied, and his grin set butterflies loose in my stomach. You seem very relaxed. That's the German dessert wine. I lied, because the truth was that I barely felt the wine. No, I felt relaxed because I was having more fun with him, had been since he'd picked me up, than I'd had in a very long time. For some reason, it was just easy to be myself around him and not get caught up in my own head. It felt like warm sunshine after a dreary, endless winter, and I was disappointed when he pulled up in front of my building a few minutes later. I wasn't ready to go back to the usual, and I felt a knot of melancholy as I looked at my lobby doors. Hey, I said, stepping out and closing the door. Take a picture with me before I go in. What is this, prom night? He teased as he came around the car. No, this is the first night since my wedding that I haven't cried about Stuart. The first night I haven't felt broken and alone. I shrugged and knew I shouldn't be sharing this with anyone, especially not a man I sort of barely knew. But in the dark of the spring night, with a tiny wine buzz, I admitted, I guess I just want to remember the night I reconnected with Happy for a few hours.
Chapter 12. Max. Come here, I said, unsure why my voice sounded so serious. Are you good at selfies? Am I good at selfies? She muttered, stepping close and holding out her phone. You insult me with your doubt. She looked gorgeous in the camera display, her lips still red and her blonde hair tousled as we leaned against my truck. The pink in her cheeks was cute as hell, and I wasn't sure if it was the pout of her mouth or the smell of her perfume that had me feeling so unbalanced. Smile, Max, she said, and I leaned a little closer for the picture. I felt her soft cheek rest against mine as she grinned for the selfie, and then she pulled back and looked at the display. Aw, look at us. She held it up to me, but I couldn't look away from her face. How was it possible that Stuart made her cry every night? That the girl who'd put a hick in a headlock felt so broken and alone? Her smile simmered down into a curve more subtle. Max? I'm sorry he made you cry, I said, putting my hands in my pockets so I didn't do something stupid like touch her. I don't know you well, but I know that Sophie Steinbeck should only ever be laughing. Thanks, she said, her voice breathy as her long lashes moved on a blink. I really am almost over it. Good, I said, feeling like there was an invisible string pulling me toward her. My eyes wouldn't stay away from her lips, and her eyes wouldn't stay away from my eyes. Was it hot out here? Fuck, I was burning up all of a sudden as I looked at those red lips. Yeah, good, she said, her voice almost a whisper, her breath mingling with mine between our very close faces. Did she just sway toward me? Shit. I better go, I said, curling my hands into fists in my pockets. Before, yeah, she agreed, nodding slowly. Definitely better go before. I swallowed and nodded too. I actually should go inside. Now. She blinked fast and tucked her hair behind her ears, looking nervous. Yeah, good night, Max. I swallowed, but my throat was dry and scratchy. Good night, Soph. Chapter 13. Max. So, what'd you do this weekend? Eli, the mechanical sub on the project, who also happened to be my best friend, took the stairs two at a time as we headed for the sixth-floor conference room. He was a former cross-country runner and thought elevators were for lazy asses. I thought about calling you during the Cubs game, but then shit hit the fan in the top of the second, so I shut it off. Good call. I'd watched a few innings of that travesty with TJ and Sophie at the dive bar. I went to a wedding Saturday, and that was pretty much it. Fun wedding or meh? I pictured Soph with the bride in a headlock. It definitely wasn't meh. I told him the story of a girl objecting and getting attacked by the bride, leaving out our involvement in the whole thing. And by the time we exited the stairwell, Eli was laughing his ass off. This is unreal, and you have to be kidding. I couldn't have made this up, seriously. This might be the first time in my life I've ever wished I'd been invited to a wedding, right? We entered the conference room, but there were only four people in there so far. We did the quick head nod thing, they were the electrical guys, before sitting at the other end of the long table. Who'd you go with? He asked quietly, taking his phone out of his pocket and setting it on the table. Anyone I know? Nah, she's a girl I met at another wedding, oddly enough. Are you seeing her? I channeled my inner Sophie and said, Is that seriously your question? Fuck off, he said in a whisper. Jane always wants to set you up with her friends, so if you're seeing someone, I'm off the hook. Makes sense, I said, picturing Sophie's red lips. And I'm not really seeing her, I just see her sometimes. Clear as mud, he muttered, then said, What's her name? Nope, I said, knowing Eli's propensity for using social media to look up every human he'd ever met. I don't need you creeping on her. Then show me a pic at least so I can sound like I know something when I tell Jane. I got out my phone, not so much because I needed to show Eli, but because I wanted to look at the damn picture again. Sophie had been all over my mind since she'd left me fucking reeling on the corner Saturday night, and I was having trouble shaking her. I pulled up the shot and held it out to him. Sophie, that's all you need to know. Who is this? I heard from behind me, an interested smile in the man's voice. Maxwell, Joseph, have you been holding out on your mom and I? Shit. My father leaned down a little, peering at the selfie on my phone. That's a nice-looking couple right there. I looked at him over my shoulder. Just a friend, Dad. A friend you went on a date with? He asked quietly, taking the seat beside me at the head of the table. It's about damn time you got back out there. I glanced at the other end of the table, for fuck's sake, Dad, but everyone else was thankfully in their own conversations. I put my phone back in my pocket as the familiar knot formed in my stomach. We went to a wedding together, I muttered, trying not to attract attention, but knowing I needed to get in front of this. It was no big deal. God help me, my dad's face lit up like sunshine as he said, That's how your mom and I met. I know. I cleared my throat and couldn't believe I'd been stupid enough to say that. I knew their adorable meet-cute story. What the hell had I been thinking? We're still waiting on a couple people, but let's just get started since I've got to meet the city planner in an hour. Brody Hart, the project manager leading the LFC build-out, started going through his status update. But since I'd already touched base with him on Friday afternoon, it was redundant information to me. Which was why I started thinking, yet again, about the almost kiss. It had come at me out of nowhere. We'd had a fun, wholly platonic evening, aside from a flirt here and there, that had been entirely in line with our partnership. So what the fuck had happened at the end of the night? One minute we'd been taking a selfie, and the next had been all electricity. It had felt like we were this close to doing something. Her eyes on mine, her lips so close. I was like a fucking middle schooler, daydreaming about almost kissing. Yes, it had been a couple years since I'd kissed a woman, but it was pathetic how obsessed I was with what hadn't happened. A goddamn near kiss, for God's sake. I needed to snap out of it. My phone buzzed, and when I took it out of my pocket, I saw a text from my mother. Mom, how long have you been seeing your friend, Maxie? I want to know everything. Damn it. I glanced over at my dad, wanting to give him my best glare for running to Mom with fake-ass dating news. But he was listening intently to Brody's rundown, already having moved on from meddling to business, which wasn't surprising. My father had always been all business. He'd built Park's Construction from the ground up, and it was a part of him, a part of our family, the same as if it was an uncle or cousin. I'd grown up going with him to job sites, spending snow days in the offices, and every summer job my sisters and I had during high school was with Parks or one of its subcontractors. I sometimes thought I loved it as much as, or more than he did, and I couldn't wait to step up when he decided to step down. Which should be now, damn it. The man was more than ready to retire. He and my mom built a house in Florida they'd been wintering at for the past 3 years, and he told me countless times that he was ready to make it a year-round home. It was obvious he wanted badly to retire and let me take the helm. So why hadn't he, you ask? Because my mother didn't want to move until all her babies were taken care of, which meant me. My two sisters were married, one with a kiddo and the other with one on the way. They had doting husbands and beautiful homes. I was her youngest, so even though I was fucking great at my job, had a mortgage on my condo and a decent investment portfolio, she apparently considered me the equivalent of a college kid living on top ramen and Kraft dinner, because I wasn't taken care of yet, aka married or in a serious relationship, things I had no interest in whatsoever. So my dad and I were basically hosed until I fell in love, which would be never. Welcome to my hell.
Chapter 14. Sophie.
So, we're really going to need talent development's buy-in, Stewart said, forwarding to the next PowerPoint slide. Buy-in. Why couldn't the jackass just say support or help? His constant use of business buzzwords drove me nuts. It was just so him. Also, why did I have to have a role that required me to sit through so many of Stewart's presentations? I sighed and looked at my watch.
There will be extensive deliverables from a reporting standpoint.
He started, and I sighed again. Deliverables. What a douche. Stewart kept talking, but his gaze went to me, and he swallowed, as if he knew he was irritating me. Good, I thought. You deserve my disdain, you jargon-vomiting assbag. I glanced to my right at Edie and gave her a commiserative smile. Surely she was suffering as much as I was from this worthless presentation. I swung my leg back and forth, watching the man who'd once tearfully confessed that he loved me too much as he laid out his team's sales forecasts. His fashion sense was as flawless as ever, and he was clearly still running. Stewart Lauren was a beautiful man and wore a suit very well. The prick. I remembered that suit, the navy Calvin Klein. He'd bought it at Macy's a few months before we got engaged, and I went with him when he got the pants tailored. It was weird, but I used to love shopping for his clothes and picking up his dry cleaning. There was just something about seeing the clothes when they weren't on his body that felt intimate, domestic even, like I was a part of Stewart's behind-the-scenes life. I told him that one Saturday as I gathered the clothes from his closet to drop off, and he'd called me painfully sweet and made me promise to love him forever.
Promise me, Soph,
he'd said, taking the clothes from my hands and wrapping his arms around me. Promise you'll always love me, because I don't think I could live without you.
I'll always love you, I'd said, smiling, wrapped in a cocoon of soft emotion. You're my person, remember?
That's right, I am.
He'd given me a half-smile, the one that told me I was charming him, and said,
Your person, and you are mine, Sophie Grace.
God, the way he used my middle name.
Really looking forward to the results we'll obtain as we synergize our ideation and workflow.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I didn't mean to, but I groaned. Out loud.
Edie's eyes shot to me, and she whispered, Are you okay?
I nodded, heat flooding my cheeks as Stuart glared at me. Everyone else in the conference room was looking at me like I'd just burped the alphabet, like they were horrified and amused all at the same time. Sorry, I said, waving a hand and pushing my lips into what I hoped was a smile. It was about something else, not you, and, email that I got. Carry on, so sorry. I heard nothing else, no other buzzwords, because I had died of embarrassment.
Sophie, can I see you for a second?
Edie asked as she walked by my desk and went into her office. Of course, I replied, glad there was no one else in the area at the moment because they would know, just like I did, that I was about to be called out for my childish behavior. I took a deep breath through my nose, pushed back my shoulders, and stood. I went into her office and she gestured for me to take a seat. I knew I should apologize, but before I had a chance, she said, How are you doing, Soph? Are you okay? Was that a trick question? Of course, I'm fine. Great, actually.
Really?
Edie sat down in her chair and stared at me with a tilted head, like she was thinking hard about me. Yes, really, I said, giving her the most reassuring smile I could come up with.
Here's the thing. We talk about work-life balance, but are we actually carving it out in our life? That's a question we all have to ask ourselves,
she said as she clasped her fingers in front of her face. Yes, I agreed, for sure.
It's important for our creativity and for our holistic well-being.
Agreed, I replied, wishing she'd get on with it.
Since your breakup, Sophie, you've been working nonstop.
No, I haven't. She put on her readers and looked at her computer screen. Friday, 3:12 a.m., an email from Sophie Steinbeck about rebranding. Saturday, the 14th at 2:30 p.m., an email from Sophie Steinbeck about benefit renewal meetings. On Easter Sunday at 10 a.m., an email from Sophie Steinbeck about a potential new payroll vendor. I blinked and tried to remember what I'd done on Easter. I mean, do I sometimes send after-hours emails? Sure. Does that mean I have no work-life balance? I don't think that's accurate.
Pardon my French, but that's bullshit and you know it.
I'll start making it a priority, I said, desperate to convince her we were on the same page, because I really do believe it's important.
Sure you do.
Edie took off her readers and leveled me with an I see you stare. The other thing here is that everyone in this department, in this building, in this company, knows that you hate Stuart Lauren.
I don't hate him,
and who can blame you? But the closer I get to retiring, the more you need to be seen as professional, charming, and well-rounded. No one is going to think you're ready for this job if you can't stop yourself from growling at Stuart every time he talks. It wasn't a growl, it was a groan, I clarified, still mortified by my childish reaction. It was a goddamn cry for help, Soph. Edie gestured toward me with both hands and said, You know that I want to recommend you, but how can I do that in good conscience if you aren't behaving like a vice president? If everyone knows you still have issues with your ex in sales. Well, shit. I didn't say anything because what the hell was there to say to that?
Let me ask you this, as a friend, she said. Have you even left the house socially since the breakup?
I wanted to say none of your business, but that wasn't going to help my case. I actually went to a wedding a few weekends ago.
She didn't look impressed.
That doesn't count.
But I went with a guy.
I got out my phone and quickly scrolled to the selfie. See? I held it out, suddenly desperate to convince her that I had a social life. That is one hell of an attractive man. She moved her face a little closer to the phone, then raised her eyes to me. Dear God, Sophie, is that the guy who crashed your wedding? Oh, shit. Yeah, funny story, I blathered. We kind of became friends after that. Oh my God, she said, her mouth dropping open. And now you're dating him? Not really, I said, but when her face fell, I added, yet. Two dark eyebrows shot up, and she sat back in her office chair. Is that right? I didn't have to fake the smile that appeared when I thought about Max, because I'd spent hours replaying that almost kiss.